Iran says the U.S. claim to be fighting Daesh in Syria is only an excuse to pillage the war-torn country's national riches. Leader of the Ansarullah movement says that the United States seeks to occupy Yemen to plunder its oil wealth and use it as a military base. And Russia says it will deploy tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus and will also deploy depleted uranium munitions if the West gives them to Kiev. Hello everyone, thank you for tuning in to World News. In our top story, two U.S. bases in Syria's eastern province of Deir Ezzor have been targeted in a third attack on American bases in the Arab country in 3 days. Media reports say rockets were fired toward bases in Quantico gas field and Al Omar oil field. Attacks came after the Pentagon said it launched airstrikes on positions of what it called Iran-linked groups. It said that this was in response to a Thursday drone attack on a U.S. base near Hasaka in northeast Syria. The Pentagon said an American contractor was killed in that attack and five American servicemen and another contractor were injured. U.S. Defense Department claimed that drone used in the attack was of Iranian origin. Washington maintains hundreds of troops in Syria under the declared objective of fighting Daesh terrorists. Damascus, however, says troops are occupiers looting its natural resources and helping the terrorists. Meanwhile, Iran condemns what it calls U.S. terrorist attacks on civilian targets in eastern Syria. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Nasser Kanani said presence of American forces in the country is against international law and violates the country's sovereignty. Kanani said the U.S. claim to be fighting Daesh in Syria is just a pretext to pillage a country's national wealth and energy resources. The spokesman rejected Washington's accusations that Tehran was involved in attacks on U.S. bases in Syria, saying such claims are baseless. Earlier, another Iranian official, spokesman for Iran's National Security Council, Kevan Khosravi, made similar comments. He said U.S. is trying to divert attention from its illegal occupation of Syria and is resorting to lies to attribute lawful retaliation against occupation to other countries. Peter Ford is a former British ambassador to Syria. He says American forces are in the Arab country to prevent it from recovering from years of war.
Frankly, the Americans are not going to leave Syria unless they are put under pressure. And that pressure, if it doesn't work, has to be increased. And that's what's going on. The fact that U.S. servicemen and contractors were killed and injured represents an important and, I think, new development. Until now, casualties have been very light on the American side. But now things are getting serious. And this is particularly important because of the political context in America. We are beginning to hear more and more voices inside America from important politicians calling for the U.S. troops to be withdrawn. The pretext that they are fighting against ISIS is a transparent excuse. They are there to prevent Syria recovering from the conflict. They are there to steal Syria's oil and use that money to finance the U.S. occupation. And they are there to encourage the formation of a breakaway Kurdish independent state. So for all these reasons, the Americans must be kept under pressure if they are to be forced out.
Leader of Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement says that the United States seeks to occupy Yemen and plunder its oil wealth. Abdul Malik al-Houthi said the U.S. wants to invade, control, and take the independence and freedom of the Yemeni nation. He warned that Washington is planning to establish a military base in the strategically located country. The Ansarullah leader also underlying that most of the weapons used in the Saudi-led invasion to kill Yemeni people are U.S.-made. The resistance leader added that Israel and Britain are provoking, planning, and guiding Saudi Arabia in its aggression. Houthi made the remarks on the 8th anniversary of the Saudi invasion of Yemen. The Western-backed war has so far killed hundreds of thousands of Yemenis and led to what the UN has time and again called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Now, demonstrators rally in Tel Aviv for a 12th consecutive week against a controversial judicial overhaul by the hard-right cabinet. Now, rallies have regularly drawn tens of thousands of protesters. Demonstrations erupted back in January after the cabinet announced its reform to limit the Supreme Court's powers. Critics argue the legal changes will foster corruption and bring about diplomatic isolation. The cabinet, however, says reforms are necessary to rebalance powers between lawmakers and the judiciary. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to press on with the changes despite mounting criticism. Israel's attorney general accuses Netanyahu of breaking the law and ignoring a conflict of interest arising from his own ongoing trial for corruption. Minister of Military Affairs Yoav Gallant has also called for the legislation to be repealed, saying it endangers the occupying regime. Palestine solidarity groups have staged a demonstration outside the UK Premier's official residence against the visit to the UK by the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Protesters describe Netanyahu as a war criminal and are calling on British authorities to hold Israel accountable for its crimes against Palestinians. Here's more.
Escaping growing protests in the occupied territories over his judicial overhaul proposals, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in London meeting his British counterpart Rishi Sunak. Outside number 10, though, protests by Gentiles and Jews telling him he's not welcome here.
He's a war criminal. The crimes against the Palestinians are going on already for more than decades by him, actually. And the people are outrageous. We as Jews, we feel a special obligation to stand up and come out against this criminal.
A sentiment echoed by other anti-apartheid campaigners here. Among them, the International Center of Justice for Palestinians, who have called on the British government to refer Israel and Netanyahu to the International Court of Justice for war crimes in Palestine.
The protesters here are saying that the UK government's welcoming of Netanyahu is a mark of approval of his right-wing government, that it provides the Israeli regime with further cover to steal more Palestinian territory and to continue with its campaign of ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people.
Earlier this week, the UK and Israel signed a so-called 2030 roadmap for UK-Israel relations, strengthening bilateral ties with the regime whose finance minister denies the existence of a Palestinian people.
This is an extreme right-wing government itself. So this is, you know, one proto-fascist government supporting a proper fascist government. So I don't feel that this government is ever representing me on other issues as well. But that they are supporting such an excessive, extreme right-wing government in Israel is a shame for all of us.
But while all eyes are on the intensified Israeli violence against Palestinians, others are highlighting another important reason that's dragged an embattled Netanyahu to Europe. His trip comes in the wake of the recent Chinese-brokered rapprochement between Iran and Saudi Arabia. Netanyahu could be here to gauge European government's position on Iran. From London, the Israeli PM will be flying to Berlin, Germany, where he is expected to be greeted with similar protests. Said Bourza, London.
Two Israeli soldiers are wounded in a shooting attack in the occupied West Bank town of Huwara. Tel Aviv says pair are conscious and are not suffering from life-threatening injuries, says a shooter fled the scene after carrying out the drive-by attack. Israeli troops have launched a manhunt for the gunman. This is the third such attack in Huwara in recent weeks. Armed wing of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine has claimed responsibility. Hamas resistance movement has praised the attack, saying shows the inability of the Israeli regime to confront resistance in the West Bank. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad also says operation shows resistance forces can surprise Israeli forces and challenge them. Russia has accused Azerbaijan of violating the Moscow-brokered ceasefire that ended a 2020 war with Armenia by letting its troops cross over the demarcation line. The Russian Defense Ministry said a unit of Azerbaijani forces crossed the line of contact in the district of Shusha in violation of the truce. Earlier, Azerbaijan's Defense Ministry said it had taken control of some auxiliary roads in Karabakh, said measures were implemented to prevent the use of the dirt roads for arms supplies from Armenia. Baku and Yerevan have been locked for decades in a territorial conflict over Azerbaijan's Armenian-majority region of Nagorno-Karabakh. Under a 2020 ceasefire, Armenia ceded the long-disputed territories to Azerbaijan. Russia has maintained peacekeeping forces there since. Now, Russia has struck a deal with neighboring Belarus to station tactical nuclear weapons on its territory. The Russian President Vladimir Putin made the announcement, saying move does not violate nuclear non-proliferation agreements. He said that Moscow's decision is not unusual since the U.S. deploys tactical nuclear weapons to the territory of its allies. Putin also warned that his country will deploy depleted uranium ammunition if Kiev receives such munitions from the West. Now on Tuesday, the UK announced the Challenger 2 main battle tanks that it plans to send to Ukraine will contain depleted rounds of uranium. Moscow warned of nuclear collision between Russia and the West if the UK proceeds with that decision. People in France once again take to the streets as part of ongoing protests against the government's unpopular pension reforms. Labor unions had called on crowds to rally against what they're describing as President Macron's scorn and lies. Clashes also broke out between police and protesters in several cities and towns. Police used tear gas to disperse protesters.
France is in a crisis mode. Police have clashed with protesters angry at President Macron's controversial pension reforms. Unions claim 3.5 million people turned out across the country, while authorities suggested the figure was much lower at just under 1.1 million. In the capital, Paris, union leaders said that a record 800,000 people took part in the march throughout the city to demand that the government drop the fiercely contested change. Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin said dozens of police officers had been injured and dozens of people were arrested across the country. Earlier, workers blocked access to a terminal at the Charles de Gaulle airport, forcing some travelers to get there on foot. French trade unions have called for fresh nationwide strikes and protests amid growing anger over the government's unpopular pension reforms. Trade unions have blamed the government for, quote, the explosive situation in the country. They also asked workers to continue protesting against President Emmanuel Macron's pension reforms.
For us, 10, 12 years ago, the previous pension reform was already unacceptable. What we want is a retirement age at 60 years old and 55 years old for those with hard-working conditions. And at one point, all these demands have to be expressed on the ground. And if we have to go beyond the demands set by the inter-unions, then this is what we will do.
Train and air travel was disrupted, while teachers were among many professions to walk off the job. Plumes of smoke were seen rising from burning piles of debris, blocking traffic on a highway near Toulouse in southwestern France. And strikes briefly blocked roads in other cities as well. Police also fired tear gas at some protesters in several other cities, and used water cannon against others in Rennes in the northwest. Protests against the measures have raged since January.
The only thing he could say to appease the younger would be that he renounces reform, that there won't be any reform, that he respects the fact that the vast majority of the people don't want it, and that he regrets the way it happened. It was, most probably won't be that way. So I think we are in a deep crisis that will linger on for weeks and maybe months.
The Iranian foreign minister has strongly condemned the French crackdown on peaceful protests in the country. Hossein Amir Abdollahian urged French authorities to respect human rights and avoid using force against peaceful demonstrators. Earlier, the Iranian foreign ministry spokesman also called on the French government to refrain from violence. Nasser Kanani said Iran does not support vandalism and rioting. He stressed, however, France must talk to its people and listen to their voices instead of creating chaos in other countries. France has been one of Western countries that criticized Iran for its handling of recent unrest in the country. Iran has repeatedly dismissed allegations of human rights violations. Now, at least 23 people have died as violent storms and at least one tornado ripped through the U.S. state of Mississippi. State's Emergency Management Agency says death toll may still rise. At least four people are missing, and search and rescue efforts are underway in several counties. Dozens of people have also been injured as a roofs are torn off homes. Tens of thousands of people in Mississippi and some neighboring states have been left without power. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has dismissed an ongoing investigation against him as phony and something straight out of a Stalinist Russia horror show, as he put it. He made the remarks while addressing his supporters in his first election rally in Texas ahead of next year's Republican primary elections. Now, Trump claims that all investigations launched against him in recent years have been one witch hunt after the next. Trump is currently being investigated by prosecutors in Manhattan for campaign finance violations ahead of the 2016 election. He's also being probed for keeping top secret documents and masterminding a plot to overturn the 2020 election results. On Friday, he issued a stern warning to his opponents, saying that the country could face death and destruction if he was charged with a crime. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
God's Month. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. According to the Holy Quran, the aim of creation of human being is to worship God. The Almighty says in Ayah 56 of Surah Az-Zariyat in the Holy Quran, I did not create the jinn and the humans except that they may worship me. Moreover, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, Prayer is the essence of worship. The statement of the Holy Prophet has its roots in the teachings of the Holy Quran. The Almighty also says in Ayah 60 of Surah Ghafir, "Call me, I will hear you." Then he considers prayer as worship and continues, "Indeed, those who are disdainful of my worship will enter the hell in utter humility." Perhaps this is the reason why some scholars maintain that prayer and supplication is the best worship. The modern world is the world of speed, and it seems that time has been shortened incredibly. Once we review our past life, we realize how much of the life we have wasted and what forces we have spent in vain. The routine life has occupied all our time, and this monotony has dragged people towards depression and despair. Prayer and supplication opens up a new horizon in front of us to ponder on our fate and come out of negligence. The blessed month of Ramadan is the best period to compensate the moments and hours of negligence. As the Holy Prophet said, even our breaths have the reward of glorification of God. That is why the faithful reach a kind of calm and tranquility after 1 month of fasting and worship. God's very great favour is that he allows us to speak with him regardless of our sins. The Almighty has bestowed so many bounties on us that if all the jinn and humans unanimously want to count the bounties given to only one person, they will fail. If you remember, we started explaining Dua Iftitah, or supplication of opening, which is emphasized to be read in the nights of the blessed month of Ramadan. In the second part of this supplication, we tell God, "O Allah, you allowed me to call you and appeal to ask you." Indeed, it is a very great bounty to utter Allah's name and to speak to him like two close friends. Then we continue, "So hear my praise, O hearer, and answer my call, O merciful, and overlook my slip towards sin, O forgiver." As it was said earlier, speaking with the Almighty has manners like any other action. One of the manners here is to mention some of the bounties before praying and calling God. Among the great bounties which are often unheeded is the bounty of repelling and removing of mishaps. The Almighty either repels many calamities before occurrence or removes them after occurrence. Thus, in continuation, we say, "O my God, how many sorrows that indeed you have erased, and worries you have removed, and slips that you have overlooked, and mercy that you have spread, and a circle of calamity that you have opened." If man only thinks over what happens around him, he will understand that the Almighty removed so many mishaps through his mercy and favour. Just suppose that you need money to cure a patient who will die if not treated immediately. Or you have not access to a specialist to cure the patient. In both of these cases, you may feel that all ways have been closed to you and you are on the verge of disappointment. Therefore, you realize that the only source that can solve your problem is God the Almighty, who owns all powers. In view of this, we have better reflect on the incidents that have happened to others but have not happened to us. If we leave home in the morning and come back in full health, it is quite because of God's will. As the Almighty has given us the eyes, He has repelled thousands of hazards from it so that we do not become blind. If the Almighty has granted us this body, He has prevented myriads of mishaps to keep our body healthy. Yet God's spiritual bounties are far more valuable. The intellect and faith are two bounties which cannot be thanked as they deserve. Many people move in the right path, but they are deviated and fall into the traps of the devil midway. So we should always plead God to keep us safe and on the right path.
Food for thought.
Salam everyone, and how about listening to a wise statement on fasting from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The easiest duty enjoined by Allah on a fasting person is to forgo food and drink.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is A to Z. An introduction to an Islamic lifestyle.
today's lesson, refraining from argument in the month of Ramadan. In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. Hello, dear brothers and listeners. Salamu alaikum. I'm Farhad, your host. These days are great days, and I wish we can make an excellent use of them. So, today, we are going to talk about another moral conditions for acceptance of our fasting, our worship in this great month by Allah, inshallah. So, let's go to our topic. We promised to talk about one moral action in every session. So, in accordance to our topic, today we will learn another moral condition of acceptance of our good deeds in the feast of Allah, in this great, let's say, festival. One of those moral conditions that we have been given an admonishment, a very serious admonishment to commit, is that we must keep away from involving in it, is something that we know as jadal in Arabic terminology, or controversy, or argument, in order to prove our position and defeat the opponent, not proving the truth. So the argument which we are received an admonishment to commit it is an argument that we are going to prove our position and defeat the opponent, not just proving the truth and showing the truth. In this case, it has ruining effects on our soul and destroys the faith in our hearts. And sometimes, in my point of view, the side effects become more serious. One of these traits that can surface on our hearts is arrogance. And this trait is the very same one that led to Satan being cast out of heaven. So it's important to know the limit of controversy and argument and control ourselves and try and practice to refrain from it.
Ramadan al-mustabin jaa bin nur al-mubin. Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadan al-qanitin.
Welcome back, dear brothers and sisters. You're listening to A to Z on Islamic Lifestyle. I'm Farhad, and you're listening to the moral conditions of fasting. Okay, we talked about controversy and argument, and we said the controversy in an argument is forbidden if it is for proving our position and overcome the opponent, not just for proving the truth. And we also understood that controversy and argument, in this case, makes arrogance blossom in our heart. And we know that this is one of the greatest sins in Islamic faith. So if we want to understand the meaning of arrogance in Islam, we can simply say that a proud person is the one who thinks himself to be the best and wants others to know that he is the best. I hope Allah protect us from this very great sin, and I wish you the best. Thank you for being with us. I wish you the best, and I hope me, myself, and you as well, my brothers and sisters, to make an excellent use of this great opportunity, this great month, the month of Ramadan. Thank you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Forgive me for everything I've done in the past, when everything was going so fast, and now I just can't go on.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir. Our email is english@irib.ir.
But I know that you are really loving, you are really caring. I can't realize, but you know that I will be better, that I will be stronger. You are by my side, Allah.
in the United States of America, families are broken.
Part 2.
These are official statistics from within the United States. Every year, about 500,000 people in America are victims of sexual violence, including 12-year-old children. However, 90% of the people who were raped are adult women. 2022. According to statistics, one out of every three women in the United States has experienced violence from her husband or partner. About 20,000 calls are made to the domestic violence help centers every day. And on the other end of the line are people who have been beaten or threatened with death by their spouses or partners. The phenomenon of violence against women in the United States may not be at the top of the world news like that of third world countries, but this does not mean that violence against women does not exist in the States. According to statistics from the National Office on Domestic Violence, one woman is battered every 9 seconds in the United States. Florida State Senator Janet Cruz's report is worth considering.
In Florida, there were 106,000 reported domestic violence offenses in 2020. And that was including more than 200 domestic violence murders.
This log home at Big Lake was one of Bree Moore's favorite places.
Her formal name is Brianna, but as she got older, she wanted to be called Bree.
Her parents say they can still feel her presence here.
She would get me up early in the morning and say, "Dad, come on, we've got to go ride. She made every minute out of her life special.
Police told the Moores their daughter's body was found at her boyfriend's home, where he lived with his parents. The Moores asked if there had been a home invasion.
They said no. They said Josh, her boyfriend, killed her.
Bree would be the last. Years later, what really was happening with Josh and in his history, this was really the inevitable.
But at the time, Bree seemed so devoted to her boyfriend, busy at her job as an aide in a dentist's office. But behind her smile, Bree's co-workers saw signs of trouble, signs they didn't reveal to the Moores until after her death.
They told me that she had come in several times with black eyes, and one time she came in, and she hadn't just been hit, they said she had been beaten. And she couldn't function, and she vomited in the sink, and she left after about 15 minutes, they sent her home.
There were other red flags.
Well, I'll read you a text message that we found on Bree's phone after we got her phone back 2.5 years after she was killed. Bree texts, "You better love me and stop hitting me, please," with an exclamation point. "Josh, of course I love you, and Ramrod hit you, not I." So Ramrod must have been, you know, when he got angry, I'm assuming.
Nadine M. Newfoyle, director of the Department of Violence Against Women at the U.S. Department of Justice, says, "Based on our findings in the United States, every day, three women in this country are murdered by their spouse or ex-partner. This statistic is very alarming for us." Nadine M. Newfoyle's story is not the story of primitive African tribes or so-called third world countries. This is the United States of America in the year 2022. The 21st century, the cradle of freedom and democracy.
Because Brandy's case reminded Guard of Anitra Coburn.
Carter kidnapped Anitra and eventually took her to her grandparents' trailer in Franklin County.
Coburn's boyfriend kidnapped her from her Pitt County home and murdered her after holding her hostage for a week.
Half a century has passed since the protests of American women in 1970. And now, domestic violence has the voice of Angelina Jolie,
a Hollywood star who was also once a victim.
Most of all, I want to acknowledge the children who are terrified and suffering at this moment, and the many people for whom this legislation comes too late.
A bipartisan group of U.S. senators has introduced a proposal to reauthorize a 1990s law that expands protections for victims of domestic and sexual violence. This law was dissolved in 2019 due to the opposition of Republicans, which has led to the promotion and increase of violence and murder in American society. Angelina Jolie asks U.S. senators to approve this law and says, "I repeat, this is one of the most important votes you will cast in the Senate this year. When silence comes from a Congress too busy to renew the Violence Against Women Act after a decade, it reinforces that sense of worthlessness. It's clear that the indifference of the Congress and the American government has troubled the 47-year-old Oscar winner. This was the third time that Angelina asked the representatives of the U.S. Congress to revise the law to control domestic violence. This law was first sent to the Senate in 1990 by Joe Biden, who was then a senator, with the aim of reducing domestic and sexual violence. A later version was included in a bill signed by then-President Bill Clinton 4 years later. Congress has since reauthorized and extended the Violence Against Women Act 3 times.
Senator Joe Biden invited them to speak.
Battered women need to be taken seriously. Proper police response can prevent what happened to me from happening to someone else. Thank you.
Thank you.
The story of domestic violence in the United States and the law to deal with it is a paraphrase of the saying, "The law often shows its teeth, but does not bite." The United States has moved away from the slogan of creating equal conditions and ideal and happy life for women. In a way, this shows America cannot be a good model for other societies. Feminist slogans try to make women equal to men in all matters. For example, the society should witness that women are beaten less. But why did feminism and women's movements target the family to achieve this goal? It was already known that a woman without a family would be disarmed. And that's how it happened. In practice, women still did not get their real rights. Until yesterday, they were under male violence at home. But today, they are under the domination of employers and cheap forces. They are now also responsible for financing themselves, a task that, at least in the distant years, was the responsibility of men. A century has passed from the American women's efforts to escape domestic violence and achieve equality. Yet domestic violence still takes 3 victims every day. Families are broken. Women are employed in menial jobs. And the salary and benefit system still consider women as second-hand labor. Kindergartens have expanded, but next to girls' high schools, right beside unmarried mothers. Joni Ernst, a Republican senator, is also a victim of sexual and domestic violence.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Nowruz Special. Hello, dear friends, and welcome to our fourth episode of our special series on the occasion of Nowruz, marking the start of the Iranian New Year. Nowruz has a rich culture and history. The culture has different elements. Nowruz songs make a significant part of these elements. In addition, there are other cultural items which have remained for centuries as symbols of Nowruz. Please stay with us. Haji Firuz is one of the cultural symbols of Nowruz, the Iranian New Year. Haji Firuz is a black-faced man who comes in the first days of Nowruz with news of the arrival of the New Year. He is a thin man wearing a red cone-shaped cap and attire. He beats a tambourine and sings very simple songs to create happy moments for people. Some sources maintain that Haji Firuz originated in the culture of Mesopotamia, while others consider it to belong to the Babylonian era. Haji Firuz is an itinerant singer who can be called the harbinger of spring. Another symbol of Nowruz is Amu Nowruz, or Uncle Nowruz, who is believed to bring gifts for children. Amu Nowruz wears long hair and white or henna beard. He also wears a felt cap, a blue silk belt, a white shawl, and thin flat shoes. According to the myths, he comes down from the mountain towards the city with a stick in his hand. Interestingly, the people in Sistan and Baluchistan region of southeastern Iran believe in Bibi Nowruz or Bibi Gulafruz instead of Amu Nowruz. Bibi Nowruz is a woman who has the same role as Amu Nowruz. There are different stories on Amu Nowruz, but you will hear one of the famous ones after this short break. The famous story about Uncle Nowruz or Amu Nowruz is the story of Nane Sarma and Amu Nowruz. Nane Sarma literally means granny of the cold. She is the symbol of winter and stagnation, while Amu Nowruz is the symbol of spring and regeneration. Nane Sarma is in love with Amu Nowruz. Nane Sarma starts cleaning and tidying her house in the beginning of spring and spreads the rug on the veranda opposite the orchard where there are fruit trees. The trees are adorned with colourful blossoms. Then Nane Sarma puts garlic, vinegar, sumac, oil tree fruit, apple, fresh sprouts and samanu in a tray, and 7 kinds of dried fruits and candies and sweets also in the tray. She makes fire and brings hookah, but does not prepare it as she waits for Amunoru's to come. As she is thinking of his coming, she falls asleep. Amunoru's arrives, but Nanesarama does not notice. Amunoru's does not wake her up. He just smokes the hookah, eats something and leaves. Alas, Amunoru's came, but Nanesarama was asleep. He won't be back until next year. According to this narration, no one knows if the old woman will meet the old man again. Some maintain that if these two meet one another, the world will come to an end. People of Kurdistan province in western Iran have special customs during Nowruz, the Iranian New Year. Kurdish people maintain that Nowruz is related to the Battle of Kaveh the Blacksmith with the unjust and criminal king Zahak. They believe that Nowruz is the day that Kaveh's victory over Zahak was sealed. So they make fire on hills and enjoy themselves hand in hand. Thus, it is customary among some Kurds to make fire on Nowruz. As the people of Azerbaijan province, the Azeri people of Iran, they set the haftsin table like other ethnicities across the country. Yet, there are some differences in their traditions. The people of Azerbaijan call Nowruz as Nowruz Bayrami or Nowruz Feast, or Il Bayrami, a feast of the year. They call the haftsin table as Bayram Sofrasi, or Nowruz spread, and they warmly welcome and every guest who comes to their house. In some areas, besides the common items, starting with the letter S, milk is also put on the haftsin table, because it is called Sut in Turkish. Well, dear listeners, thanks for being with us. Goodbye and God bless.
Football, the most important event in the world. Over 400 years have passed since the first newspaper was printed in the history of mankind. Now, newspapers have become something very ordinary in our daily lives. Even if we don't buy it, sometimes we stand by the newsstand and take a look at the headlines and the pictures. Every day, over 300 million copies of newspapers are sold throughout the world. Political, cultural, ideological, and yellow press, and those about the minorities, and of course, sports newspapers. Who can deny that the largest numbers of issues are for sports newspapers? Seeing a football player's picture and a controversial headline on the front page of a newspaper will tempt anyone to buy a copy of it. It's true. Most of the analysis and news items in sports dailies are about football. But the story isn't that simple. Now there are millions of sites on the internet that are about football news and analysis. From the sites that cover the news about a club or even a player to credible sites that have 500,000 visitors every day. Yes, we have to add television and radio programs to all of them. It seems football is the most important event in the world. It doesn't look like anyone or anything can draw the attention of the media as much as football. July 13th, 2014, the biggest failure of legendary Lionel Messi, the unforgettable final match in Brazil. Germans got lucky in injury time.
Philipp Lahm will lift that trophy.
The majestic championship of the disciplined German team.
Germany, deserved champions of the world.
Over 1 billion people were watching the game live, and almost all reputable media in the world had no other schedule other than covering the final match in the World Cup. During those moments, Israel carried out the fifth day of its attacks on Gaza. That day, when all of the media were busy predicting the World Cup champions, the Israeli army shelled 173 locations in the Gaza Strip. They killed 13 Palestinians.
Press waiting, as we all are, for the arrival of the two teams.
But the media couldn't stay away from football, and it had a clear reason: money. Football is so attractive that millions of people will sit in front of the TV to watch it. The live coverage, news, the sideline issues, analysis, and even technical charts, they make the job much easier. The money paid for buying a newspaper, the money television stations earn from the advertisement during the halftime, and of course, the money the websites on football earn. The media are economic corporations before anything else. Money directs everything. A news report about a bombing in Pakistan or civil war in Sudan cannot gather even an iota of the audience of a football match. That's why football has turned into the most important preoccupation of the media. Well, at least that's the case during the World Cup games. During the days of the World Cup games are being held, media representatives are everywhere, filming on the sidelines, taking pictures or conducting interviews, reporting the games in many languages on the seats, preparing their reports in media halls, shouting in press conferences, following the players and coaches,